Good morning. So, I have no relationships to disclose that present a conflict of interest, but I have several relationships that I would like to disclose. My community partners, so it's interesting, Amber, that Food Share is your name for SNAP in Wisconsin. It's our regional food bank in Greater Hartford, Connecticut. And I've worked closely with these three community partners, Food Share, Chrysalis, and the Junior League of Hartford on this project. Several other funders that I'd like to report. I stand up here today because of a lot of other people who've worked with me to do this research. Michelle Wolf, if you can just raise your hand. She's one of the co-authors of this work and has been involved closely on this research. I am preaching to the choir, but I always like to define what we're talking about. So food insecurity, I'm sure you're all very familiar with the definition. I describe food insecurity as it manifests itself with families first worrying about having enough food at the end of the week or at the end of the month, to then adults cutting back on the quality, nutritional quality of their food, to finally in the most severe range, which I'll talk quite a bit about in our data, the most severe level where adults and then children are cutting back on the quantity of their food because there isn't enough money to buy more, what we call very low food security. The most recent estimates, as you're all aware, are that nearly 15% of all U.S. households are experiencing food insecurity in 2012. We live in arguably the wealthiest country in the world. We have the smartest phones. We put satellites around our globe, and yet we have not figured out how to ensure that people have access to enough healthy food for their families. And this has major public health implications. There is strong research showing that food insecurity is linked to other chronic diseases like hyperlipidemia, hypertension, diabetes, also obesity, particularly with women, and also psychosocial indicators like depression for adults and poor developmental indicators and delays for children. We have strong data that connect these chronic diseases with food insecurity. But as I'll talk about in my research, we tend to disassociate these when we address hunger and when we address chronic diseases. We often don't think of them as hand in hand, and I think we should. Just to show the data from the U.S. Census Bureau, since we've been measuring food insecurity nationally since 1995, even during really strong economic times during the late 1990s, our food insecurity rates nationally have hovered around 10%. You can see the recession, and now we're stuck pretty steady at around 15% of all U.S. households. If you're going back for a moment. In response to food insecurity, the U.S. government has created some 15 federal food assistance programs to address food insecurity and hunger, including SNAP, WIC, school lunch, school breakfast, etc. Most of these were developed in the 1960s, early 1970s. And during the early 1980s, with drastic cuts during the Reagan administration to our federal food programs, there was a large response from charitable organizations, faith-based organizations, churches, who developed an emergency response to hunger. These are our regional food banks, local food pantries, soup kitchens, shelters, that are now providing food to some 37 million Americans, including 14 million kids. I was talking with Kim here as we were just, this is why you come to APHA, to network with other people. And I just met Kim, who's working with Feeding America, the national clearinghouse for food banks in the U.S. About 1 in 8 Americans now rely on food pantries for food. And the panel that was before this, several of you might have been in, as we think about our food environments, and we're becoming increasingly aware as we think about chronic diseases and food insecurity, obesity, that we have to pay attention to what food is available and affordable for particularly low-income families. So we're being concerned about our grocery stores and fast food restaurants. And I would argue that we need to pay more attention to the fact that our food pantries are very much a part of our national food environment. And I think they often get forgotten in terms of what food people can access and afford in terms of healthy food or non-healthy food. And just as I showed the rates of food insecurity nationally during the same time frame, as you look at the increasing rates of food insecurity during the same time frame, this is the estimate of the number of emergency food agencies nationally. We've been growing more and bigger food banks food pantries in nearly every community in the United States of America. And yet, even with these increasing numbers, our food insecurity rates are about as high as they've ever been. And I would argue that's because most of the emergency food programs were not designed to address the underlying issues of food insecurity. This is not rocket science. I think if you polled most people and asked, why do we have hunger and food insecurity, they would say lack of jobs, lack of good paying jobs, mental health issues, substance abuse issues, the high cost of housing, medical care, child care, transportation, etc. Again, not rocket science, but the way that we address the problem of food insecurity and hunger is almost entirely about food. And yet, food insecurity is about more than just a lack of food. Hunger makes us very uncomfortable. As a nation, we are very uncomfortable with the thought that our neighbors are going hungry, not having food for their families. And the charitable response, having food banks, food pantries in all of our communities, is a very easy way for us to relieve that discomfort. We can feel very good about donating food. Yet the message is sent that this is an appropriate and effective way of addressing food insecurity, but it is a band-aid. It's not a long-term solution. And despite the fact that we have thousands of food banks and food pantries, or hundreds of food banks, thousands of food pantries nationally, and I would imagine everyone in the room has been involved in charitable food giving, we have not rigorously evaluated the impact of those food pantries on food insecurity. And as Janet Poppendyke writes beautifully in her book, Sweet Charity, it's an example of how our government has failed to provide a safety net for people in need. So this is an alternative type of food pantry that I'll be discussing. It's called Fresh Place. It's located in Hartford, Connecticut. These are my community partners that I've worked with. I did this research when I was working at the University of Connecticut. Now I'm at the University of St. Joseph. And the three main components of Fresh Place and how they differ from traditional food pantries is first, it's a client choice pantry where people can shop with dignity. They choose their own food like they would at a grocery store. They have appointments, so they don't wait in line to come to Fresh Place. I think the most important difference from traditional food pantries is that Fresh Place members meet with a project manager when they first come to Fresh Place, and they design their own Fresh Start plan to identify their own goals for becoming food secure and self-sufficient. They meet with that project manager once a month to review those goals. It's based on stages of change model, social cognitive theory, and he uses motivational interviewing, the project manager, to help them review their goals, set new small goals for the next month. And then thirdly, we have additional services like computers where people can search for jobs, prepare a resume. There's nutrition education on site, and we have cooking matters classes, shopping matters classes at Fresh Place. As I mentioned, this is the first study to rigorously evaluate a food pantry intervention. And I'm really proud of that fact. We conducted a randomized control trial over 18 months. We recruited people from traditional food pantries, and we randomized them to either participate in the Fresh Place program or to continue receiving food from traditional food pantries. We followed them for 18 months and did quarterly surveys. We tracked over 200 people for these 18 months. Our main outcomes were food security using the USDA food security module, self-sufficiency using a Missouri Family Community Action Self-Sufficiency Scale, and then the Block Food Frequency Screener for fruit and vegetable consumption. At baseline, a full 84% of households were food insecure. For those of you familiar, the USDA defines these now in terms of four categories. 8% were fully food secure, 8% were marginally, where they worry about having enough food for their families, 34% were low food secure, and a full half of the pie chart here were very low food secure, meaning they were experiencing hunger, cutting back on the size and quantity of their food. Also at baseline, just some other demographic information, about a quarter of our study participants had someone in their family with diabetes. Two-thirds of study participants had someone in their household who was hypertensive. 70% were overweight or obese, so very high chronic disease rates, and people were going to multiple food pantries on a chronic basis. Over the course of a year, Fresh Place members were less than half as likely to experience very low food security as the control group. This is encouraging because during the same time that we conducted this study, the USDA reported that while food insecurity rates did not change significantly, the proportion of U.S. households in that very low food secure condition actually increased significantly, and we cut that number in half. Fresh Place members also increased fruit and vegetable consumption, on average about one serving per day compared to the control group. Also encouraging because most Americans aren't eating enough fruits and vegetables, and being part of Fresh Place increased fruit and vegetable consumption. We also have a really nice linear trend in self-sufficiency indicators. So this is a measure of 10 indicators, including education, employment, housing, mental health, physical health, childcare, transportation, psychosocial stress. So we see that this also significantly differed from the control group over time. We just recently got a grant from the Aetna Foundation to add a nice component called Getting Ahead Workshops, which will be in tandem with the project manager working with people one-on-one on their goals. This is a workshop where people work in groups to self-investigate the issues in their lives that might be holding them back from getting ahead, and they examine ways to build their resources. And as one of our workshop participants mentioned, poverty does not have to be accepted as a norm due to race, creed, or homelessness. And again, it's addressing those underlying issues of why people need food in the first place. It's very much rooted in economic class and poverty. So some of the recommendations I have for food pantry specifically, I talk with a number of people who are interested in this type of model for their own food pantries. And I mentioned to them, with Fresh Place, we have one paid full-time project manager, but we rely on almost entirely the rest of the work is conducted with volunteers. And there's a lot of people power that is involved with donating, distributing, bagging, collecting charitable food that I think could be reconfigured to design pantries as a client choice pantry where people can shop with respect and dignity, and also training one skilled volunteer even or a paid staff member to be trained in motivational interviewing to provide more one-on-one case management. And to really think of longer-term food security rather than just short-term Band-Aid assistance. Incorporating the health concerns within the donations within pantries is really important. I think the Fresh Place model is a nice example of how food pantries can serve as intervention sites for nutrition education, for cooking matters, shopping matters. Shopping Matters is a great program because people learn about skills for reading nutrition labels and shopping, and then they go to the local stores. So again, thinking of the food environment of how we link knowledge from food pantry clients to their local community in the grocery stores where they're shopping. We are in the process of creating a replication manual and a fidelity model so that this can be scaled up. There are food pantries in nearly every community around the U.S. There are also social service agencies like our Chrysalis Center. There are regional food banks in most communities. We work closely. There's funding for Fresh Place from United Way, a national organization. Junior League is a volunteer group of women that has national partners. And we hope to be able to scale this up in other communities. National implications. I'm so thrilled to meet Kim from Feeding America, because one of our hopes is to gain leadership from Feeding America as the national clearinghouse for food banks to create nutrition guidelines for both donors and for food pantries. There are several examples of how local food pantries and food banks have come up with scales like red light, yellow light, green light for health standards, nutrition standards within pantries. We could have a national model to do this. We really need to make the connection between hunger and obesity. The data is there, the science is there, and yet when we address hunger and when we address obesity, I think they're often very fragmented, and we need to make the stronger connection that they often go hand in hand. Food pantries were designed to treat emergencies, and yet we've had them now growing in size and number for 30 years. This is a chronic condition, and so I think the way that we think about these, we need to shift the mentality of understanding that they're a chronic food source for millions of Americans. And as I mentioned, even though we all like the idea of giving charitable food, we need to research the outcomes of these pantries. And rather than just measuring in number of people and pounds, but looking at outcomes. There's contact information, and I'm happy to answer questions. Thank you.
And we've got time for maybe one or two questions.
Sean. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. By definition, people who go to a food pantry are considered food insecure by the USDA, the standard definition of food insecurity. But I think a lot of it is that unless we're addressing those underlying issues of why people need food, the food is just the tip of the iceberg. And so many people will make sure that they pay their rent, they pay their utility bill, and that the food piece is secondary. So going to multiple different food pantries to get that separate piece, while they still may be food insecure, if it's not addressing their ability to afford and access food longer term, then it's just a stopgap. Yeah. Yes?
One question.
Sure. Yeah, probably all of the above, but I think one of the things that we found has been helpful is we have SNAP educators and nutritionists often on site, and they will see the food that we have. You know, let's say in July we have green beans, and then in September we have eggplants, and many food pantry clients may not be familiar with a certain food item, and they can very easily look on their phone, their tablet, and pull up recipes and walk people through. Here's a simple way that you can use this food. So taking the food that's available that is seasonal, it may change, and then providing that nutrition ed specifically for the food that's there. So it's not just this generic, you should eat more fruits and vegetables, but rather, here's this food item you've never seen before. Here's how you can, you know, cook this at home this week. Here's a recipe, something very tangible.
We have time for maybe one more question.
Yes.
Have you been able to make the connection with Beth Access in this model? Is that part of the Fresh Start plan?
Right, so benefits in terms of other federal food assistance programs, yes. That's definitely right off the bat, asking, ensuring that people are receiving SNAP, WIC, et cetera. Most of them, the vast majority are, and I think that goes to show exactly why we need more alternative approaches and fundamental approaches, because most of these people who are experiencing very low food insecurity are receiving SNAP and going to multiple food pantries every week. So we're missing a key component of what causes hunger and food insecurity. So I'm around for questions after. Thanks.
Thank you.